All right. Well, thanks you so much for you guys who have been with us in the month of August. You've joined us on this trek, you could still call it, I guess. But we've been studying Joshua and what it looks like to prepare for the next generation to advance a mission forward. And we've themed this sermon series out with Star Trek, The Next Generation. Looking at kind of the themes that were in that show, but how that show was still in the same universe as your... Who was the first captain? Captain Kirk, right? And so he's still in that same universe, a storyline that proceeded later from that. But it's like the next generation, 70 years later after Kirk, how are they doing? What are the worlds they're exploring? There's been peace with the Klingons, but there's new enemies to fight with the Borg, and there's all. So it's, we're taking the next step in the mission, and we're looking and theming out what does that look like for Genesis to take the next step. We're not 70 years removed from when we first started Genesis. We're 8 years, but we are in a time of transition. We are in a time where we see some of the leaders in our church moving on. We see a lot of people who were here when this church was started. They've grown up, gotten married, moved off. And so we've had a lot of turnover over the last 8 years with a lot of new faces coming in. Many of us here were not here from the initial... In fact, who was not here when the church started 8 years ago? That's a lot of hands, okay? That's a majority of us were not here for the initial groundbreaking. We are going to do a church in Eureka 8 years ago. But many of us are here now because a church generation ago, they did that. Because a group of people 8 years ago decided, man, we need this here in Eureka. We need to start a church and reach. And the idea being a place, Genesis Church, a place for new beginnings, that this will be, we're going to reach out to people who have been burned by the church, who are exploring church for the first time, who have been casual churchgoers, but really need gospel call in their life and calling them to faith and repentance and trusting in Jesus. And so we wanted to create a church that was a place like that. And so I say we, I wasn't even here at that time. I jumped on 5 years ago, so I wasn't even here at the initial groundbreaking. But that the heart of the church is that's who we want to reach. We want to reach people, Eureka, for Jesus, to show Jesus' love here in the city. And so we've talked a lot about in the last 5 weeks, what does it look like to plan for the next generation, as many of us have just admitted, we are new here. Where this isn't something we started, that we learned last week that there's a lot of things that had happened to lead us to this point. There's a lot of things that happened to lead Genesis to this point. You and your personal storylines, you have your storylines, like something led you here. That there were events and circumstances and connections and people that somehow got all of us, all very different storylines, but somehow got all of us here today, right here in Genesis Church in Eureka. And that Genesis Church didn't just pop up and say, okay, now there's going to be 82 people gathered here, and we're going to have kids over there with 30 to 40. And it didn't just happen one Sunday. That it grew and developed and took time, and that we sort of stand on the shoulder of giants from our last sermon, that there were people who plowed and toiled to get what we have today. And so we can all stand here and praise God and worship God for the great things that we've seen accomplished in Genesis. This year, this past summer, as we've been beating the drum and reminding us that this is a great thing to celebrate, that we have sent two international trips, one to Haiti that had 22 people and one to Ecuador that was, is that six? Sorry. Okay. And so we had two international mission groups. The one that went to Ecuador, they reached they went to a people group that had not heard the gospel, did not have a gospel presence in their community. They hiked up a mountain to this unreached people group where they were able to share the gospel. And Eric, the worship leader, the guy who was singing songs just a minute ago, that he went there and taught people praise songs and how to lead worship. And so Pastor Mike, who you'll see later on, he's the normal preaching and teaching pastor, he He jumped into the Haiti trip and went there and taught pastors how to care and read the Bible and preach. And so he did some pastoral training with these pastors in Haiti. And so we sponsored those two mission trips. We did kids clubs here. We did Charleston mission trip where we took over 80, I think maybe close to 90 people that we sent to Charleston to live for a week and invest in a ministry that's there. And so we have a lot that we could celebrate God doing, but we need to remember that there's a storyline. Something took us here. It didn't just happen overnight. And so as we look back on the history of Genesis and see what it's developed, where it's grown, we also need to have an eye on the future. Where is it going? Where is the mission of Genesis Church? Where is that going to take this church? Where are we going to see, okay, God, we feel like you want us to take that hill. Where is that hill? What is that hill for you personally? What is that hill for this church? Where are we charging into? Certainly we're not charging into, maybe that's a little too strong language, but there is a obstacle or a things that we need to find in the culture. Like, there is a pocket of people who don't know Jesus. I need to find a way to meet these people. I need to find a way to love these people. I need to find a way to share Jesus with these people. Oh, here's a group of people over here that they're hurting, that they have a need in their life that most of us don't have. They have a need that a lot of people that I know at church could help. Let's start investing and pouring resources and time into this issue so that we can love them with the way God has loved us. And so what are those issues? What are those hills that we need to climb? What are those obstacles that we need to hurdle? Where can we push the mission further in Eureka? And so we're going to talk about today being committed to the mission. That as a church, as we start looking for strategically, where do we need to go put a gospel community? Where do we need to have a community group that meets weekly? Where can we start a new kids club? You know, where can we find new people exploring new worlds, pushing the boundaries to find people who have not heard Jesus or have not heard it from us that we can share the love of Christ and the message of the gospel to? And we've talked in this message about what does it look like to shrink back and get distracted? What does it look like to miss out on the mission? And today we're going to talk about being committed, that these distractions, these idols, these things in our lives that want to pull us away from this mission, want to pull us away from climbing the hill for God, that there are things in our lives that will distract us from that mission. Now, for me personally, I think of a story of what it means to be committed at all costs, what it means to be fully in on this issue, and that whatever distraction comes your way, it's just not going to be able to pull you off topic. It's not going to be able to pull you off track of, this is my mission, I'm going to accomplish it. And I remember, my college year, I went to Missouri Baptist University, not very far from here, and I remember going, just kind of doing a nominal college experience. I was very involved in a church out in Eureka. I didn't spend a lot of time up there. I knew some people the first couple years, but never really was fully invested in like the college scene. And so my friends, at our junior year, I was engaged and getting married that summer, and so I didn't really have like a senior year, like a senior college year coming up, because I was going to be married, I was going to start a family, so I was kind of moving on to that next stage of life where most people would have their senior trip. And so a lot of my friends said, man, we need to have something, right? We need to have something in our college experience where we can say, man, this is our trip. This is the week that we went and we just did something crazy. What are we going to do? And so they picked the junior year, spring break, to go whitewater rafting. Now, for Missouri Baptist, they get out of school really early, which means they have their spring break really early in the spring. So whitewater rafting, like all the ice has just recently melted, it's freezing, it's at its peak in terms of the rush of the water, and so it's kind of one of the more dangerous times. In fact, it's kind of a coin toss whether or not they'll start some weeks. They'll just kind of gauge it. Did too much ice melt? Is it, you know, the rapids too crazy? Can we really take people who are paying money on this without, you know, losing their lives? And like that's what we're going. We're like, man, we're going to do this. It's going to be awesome. And we're going to pick the river that Deliverance was shot on. For those of you who have seen Deliverance, they would point out memorable scenes that were shot on the river. And it is just like, okay, that's what we're going to do. So we watched Deliverance the night before. I don't know whose idea it was, but I was there. And And so we watched it, and then we woke up at like 4 in the morning, because it's a 13-hour drive out to like South Carolina. And so we're going to drive all day. So we woke up really early, 4 o'clock in the morning, and we're driving. Okay, so we're in a minivan, and it's some guy's mom's minivan. There's 6 guys in this minivan with luggage. And so we're pretty packed in there. I mean, it's 6 college guys. This isn't a minivan mom with, like, you know, soccer kids in the back. I mean, this is 6 grown guys in this car for 13 hours with like 2 pit stops, and we're trucking, and we get there, and it's starting to get a little cloudy, and we're like, oh man, we're all just tired and beat. And so we pull over. We didn't stay in a hotel. We decided we'd stay in a park. That was wooded, and it was kind of creepy. You know, you're out in the middle of the woods. There's no one around you, and so we were like, okay, let's pitch this tent really quick. Let's just jump inside. We have this huge tent. All 6 of us are going to sleep in, and so we get inside this tent, and we throw it up real quick. It's late. It's storming. We get in the sleeping bags. We go to bed. And all through, I mean, we're sleeping on rocks basically. We didn't really clear the we didn't make sure we found a nice flat spot, so no one's getting good sleep, and it's just storming like crazy. I mean, the storm picks up, pelting us with rain, and it's about halfway through the night that you had 6 guys lined up, and the guy on the end was asleep, or he was just quiet, and the guy next to him, so this is not the first guy next to the outside of the tent, but the next guy, he says, about halfway through the night, he says, man, my sleeping bag's soaked. I need to get out of here. And the guy who was on the edge of the tent said, oh man, I'm glad you said something. I was just getting cold. I didn't want to be the first guy to say something. And he was drenched. That water had to go through him to get to the rest of us. And so he's just miserable and like shaking and cold. He's like, I didn't know it was water. I was just freezing. And we're just like, what is wrong with you? So what we do is we just abandon the tent. Okay, the tent is lost. And we abandon the tent and we go sit in this minivan and try to sleep. Okay, so 6 guys in this minivan sleeping, kind of, and I mean, I maybe got an hour's sleep the whole night, and all of us were just dying, and it's kind of a cold, nippy morning, and we're just like, man, I don't know about this. I mean, we drove all the way out here, but we've had a rough go of it, and so we go to McDonald's, and we use, I'm brushing my teeth at McDonald's, and, you know, we're getting cleaned up in the bathroom of McDonald's. That should be the biggest detour. If that's the biggest distraction, it's when you have to get ready in a bathroom at McDonald's. And so we get ready. We go to the resort, the place where they're going to go whitewater rafting. And so they say, okay, guys, we don't know. We're going to test the water. It may not happen. And in my mind, I'm thinking, yes, here's my out. It may not happen because it's too dangerous. I can just go. We'll just go find a city and hang out in the city all day, and we don't have to go whitewater rafting. And so in my mind, I'm thinking, yes. Finally, I have my out. I don't have to be the first guy to say, I don't want to do this. Well, he comes back and he's like, man, it's going to be awesome rapids. It's going to be crazy, crazy cold, but if you guys are all good with it, you can do it. And so we're all kind of, no one wants to be that first guy, right? No one wants to say, oh, nah, let's just not do it. Like, we're all men and juniors in college, right? We're trying to take that next stage in our lives. We're like, no, we're men. We're going to do this. And so all of us do it. It was a blast. It was freezing cold, but it was just that what was keeping us committed was this initial desire to go, this idea that we made this commitment to each other, we made this commitment to do this thing together, and we wanted to have this final trip of our college careers, and so just that idea of man, we're going to be committed to this, and it doesn't matter what gets thrown at us. We're going to keep going. We're going to keep doing this. And we had a hope that the joy that would come to us at the end of this would be great. And we have some great pictures of this this raft that literally is just, I mean, almost about flipped over. Like the guide says, I don't know how we didn't all end up in the water, because he like overshot a rapid and went up on a rock, and it was, and at the end we just tell all these stories. It was a great time in our lives. My best man in my wedding was from this group, and we just had a great experience. And so the joy that came to me from that experience, I was committed to having that. I was committed to having that experience, despite what life would throw at me. And so we're going to talk about commitment today. There's a lot of things that we can get committed with. There's a lot of things that are thrown at you asking for your commitments. And so how are you going to know what to stay committed to, when to bail, when to get out of there? How are you going to know how to, should I be committed to this? Or how are you going to remain committed to the mission of God? How are you going to know, like, man, this is where Genesis is going in Eureka. This is what they see. This is what the leaders of Genesis see as possible in the city of Eureka. How do you stay committed to that vision? How do you stay committed when we say we're going to go take a hill and we're going to go plant a new community group in a new area and we're going to reach people there. We're going to show them that God loves them, that God cares for them. How do we, when we say, here is a service project that we can serve the city. How do you stay committed when life around you is constantly saying, no, it'd be better to be committed over here. No, let's steal your time over here. Some very good things. For me, it's never good things. For me, it's always bad things. Bad things want to steal my time. Like I talked about last week, fantasy football, video games, movies. I'm constantly giving my time away to things. Is that really worth it? Short term, I'm like, yes. Long term, I'm like, why did I do that? All throughout college, that was my story. Weston, you have a 10-page paper due tomorrow. When have you started it? No, I haven't started it. I was watching the Matrix trilogy. I think this constantly in my life, okay? But some of you guys have really good things that can steal time away from you. Some of you say, man, we want our kids to be invested in sports. They learn lots of great lessons. They learn lots of good things. It develops character inside them. And so you have some even good things that say, you know, maybe we need to pull you away here. Or maybe it was just too rough. It was too tough to stay with it, to stick with the commitment level. Life is just crazy right now. For me, I'm having a baby anytime I'm on call. If Casey waves at me, I will jump off this stage and we will run to the hospital. There's things in our lives that can just come up and it's like, wow, what can I do about this? There's too much time, there's too much commitment. And what happens a lot of times is your commitment to church, your commitment to the mission of God can easily be one of the first things that we cut. It can easily be one of the first things to say, oh, I came across this first obstacle, and it's too hard, it's too difficult. Let's not stick with it. Let's stick with it on a casual level, maybe. Let's not fully engage, let's not fully commit. And so that's what we're going to look at today when we read Joshua. If you turn to Joshua 24, verse 14 through 28, he's going to be calling his people to a high level of commitment to the mission of God. If you don't have a Bible, there's Bibles on the ends of your rows. You'll find that on page 171 or 172 in those Bibles. And Joshua is leading a group of people called the Israelites. And they've got a history. Moses, there's a movie coming out about Moses. Noah, the movie that was out there, without the rock, it's Noah minus the rock giants. And so you've got those stories in their history, and they're aware of these stories, and Moses has been telling them these stories. And so when Joshua takes over after Moses, when Joshua takes over this group of people who were delivered out of slavery from Egypt and were brought into this land that God said, I'm going to make you a prosperous nation, a prosperous people in this land. And Joshua is the head guy, and as he ends his life, as his life is coming to an end, he knows this is going to be like, this is my last speech. Here's my parting speech. Here's my memoirs, right? I want to inspire you, and I want to give you like sort of a detailed history of our lives, where we've come from, but I want to inspire you for what is to come. And he arrives to this last part, this final speech to all the people, and he wants to remind them to be committed to everything he's been telling them about. About following the mission of God, about pursuing what it looks like to have God as their God and for them to be the people of God. And he wants to call them to that high level of commitment in Joshua 24, verse 14. Now therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in faithfulness. Put away the gods that your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of your fathers who served in the region beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites who in whose land you dwell. So you dwell in the Amorites. Are you going to serve the fathers' gods from the past in Egypt? That when you were enslaved and you had to worship and be controlled in your worship back then, are you going to worship the Amorite gods who are people who are around you? Are you going to submit to the culture and follow what they say is this is how you live life? These are the values you should have. And Joshua says, but for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Here's your coffee cup verse, right? And this is the context that brings this out is he's saying, hey, if you think it is evil to serve the Lord. If you and evil is probably a bad word for us to use in bad translation. It's saying if you think it's burdensome, if you think it's a bad thing, if you think it's a disaster, if you think it's a catastrophe. This is the same word that's used in Jonah when talking about the big whale came to swallow Jonah, that or a tempest, a wave that came to knock the boat. That it constantly uses the word evil to talk about these negative things. So when you see evil here, you're saying, if you think it is a catastrophe, if you think it is a disaster, if you think that serving the Lord is going to be disastrous towards your life, then you need to come to, have your come to Jesus moment now, and you need to make a decision. You need to decide, are you going to stick with it? Yeah, it's going to be difficult, but if you find that this is going to be life-crushing, well, now's the time to make the commitment. Are you going to commit to serving God in the midst of these struggles, in the midst of these unsure of if I go charge the hill, is there going to be anybody with me? If I go advance the mission of God, is anybody coming with me? Will my mission fail? It might be a question that comes up in my mind very often as I look to think, man, I feel God calling me to the city to plant a new church, to start a new church, to meet people in the city. What if it fails? And Joshua says, as for me and my house, man, we're just going to serve the Lord. We're not going to worry about these distractions. We're not going to worry about these other gods, these other values. The world around us says, man, this is what it means to have life. This is what it means to really be alive. I'm not going to worry about that. I'm going to continue to follow God. I'm going to keep my nose to the grindstone and follow the Lord. Then the people answered, far be it from us that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods. For it is the Lord our God who brought us and our fathers up from the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery, and who did those great signs in our sight, and preserved us in all the way that we went, and among all the peoples through whom the land. Therefore, we also, for whom we passed. Verse 18, and the Lord drove out before us all the people, the Amorites, who lived in this land. Therefore, we also will serve the Lord, for he is our God. So Joshua goes to the rallying cry, and he says, sir, that my house, it doesn't matter what evil, what disaster comes about, we will serve the Lord. And the people respond. Okay, this is that brave heart moment. This is that speech where Joshua stands up and says, man, we're just going to serve the Lord. That's my household is going to do that. I'm going to go and die, but I have trained my people, I have trained my sons and daughters to follow the Lord. And the people respond, and they say, yes, we are buying in. We will serve the Lord too. How could we forsake God? He brought us out of Egypt. He delivered us out of slavery. How could we forsake God? He brought us to this land, and he kicked all the guys out of it. We didn't have to lift a finger. God ran the show and provided us this land. Where earlier it says in verse 13, I gave you a land on which you did not labor, and cities that you did not build, and you dwell in them. You eat the fruit of vineyards and olive orchards that you did not plant. And the people say, man, we will serve God. If God has proven himself to be faithful to us, we will serve God. And Joshua's not so sure. I mean, when you're asking for a high level of commitment, where he's saying there's a job to be done. There's a mission to be advanced. It's not just this cute, I'll serve God and I'll show up to church and feel good and we'll watch some clips about Star Trek and it'll be a fun time. And he's calling them to something greater, okay? And that's what we're doing. We're calling Genesis to something greater than just showing up on Sunday morning. That there is a mission that needs to be advanced. That there is a goal that we need to be striving towards, a goal of reaching the lost. And maybe I'm even okay with you writing a number down. You don't have to. I'm not okay with you saying I'm going to save 10 people this year and it's going to happen, or I'm going to baptize 5 people this year and it's going to happen because I spoke over it and God told me that. I'm not really cool with that. But what I am cool with is you saying I am going to witness to one person a week. I am going to share a gospel message. I'm going to tell them that Jesus loves them. I'm going to do that. And maybe one a week might sound crazy, but maybe one a month is obtainable. That I am okay with us saying, here is a hill that I'm going to charge. I'm going to be intentional in pursuing the mission of God here in Eureka, here in your neighborhoods that you live, in your personal lives, that I am on mission for God, that I am taking the next step, that as Genesis Church, the next generation, advances the mission into Eureka, I am on board. And Joshua hears the affirmation. Okay, so you guys say you're on board, but he doesn't let him off the hook. He doesn't say, okay, I believe you. Here's what he says in verse 19. But Joshua said to the people, you are not able to serve the Lord, for he is a holy God. Now, that's got to be kind of frustrating, doesn't it? Hey, as for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord. Are you guys going to serve the Lord? Yeah, Joshua, we're going to serve the Lord. Oh, you can't do that. Like, that's just what happened. Like, that's kind of crazy. Like, what do you mean? You just told us to serve the Lord. You told me you can do it. You told me your whole household can do it. Why can I not serve the Lord? And he says, you cannot serve the Lord, for he is a holy God. He is a jealous God. Jealous for his own fame. A lot of people have trip over that word. How could God be jealous? I listened to Bill Maher, and Bill Maher says, I've known people who have gotten over jealousy. How could God not get over jealousy? The biggest problem is, for people, I have no reason to be jealous. You know, I have no reason for anybody to love me more than they do. But God has every reason for people to love him more than they do. That God is the creator of everything, the creator of this earth and creator of us, that we owe him more devotion than we could ever possibly give him. And so he is a jealous God that we are unable to fully serve in our own being, in our own might. And Joshua says, man, don't casually say you're going to serve the Lord. He said, I said I'm going to serve the Lord, but you need to understand I am saying that with an understanding of the holiness of God and how God doesn't need me to worship him, but how I'm invited into his family. He says, so let's not just casually throw that out there, because he is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgressions or your sins. And it's not that he's saying God doesn't forgive. What he's saying is if you commit to being on mission with God, and then you pull away and go follow another God, go follow another idol, go serve a different value. That breaches the contract. That breaches the covenant language of God is going to be my God and I'm going to be his people. That breaches that we're in violation. You're now under the curse of the covenant. He says, so don't lightly say these things. If you forsake the Lord and serve foreign gods, then he will turn and do you harm and consume you after having done you good. He brought you to this land, he did all these good things, but if you violate this covenant, good things are not going to come. He's not going to keep blessing you if you continue to run from him and continue to violate the commitment that you made. And the people said to Joshua, no, but we will serve the Lord. So they said, no, we are serious. We get what you're saying, that you're calling us to a high level of commitment. You're not just calling us to show up on Sunday. You're calling us to be on mission with God. And we get it. We are on board. We will serve the Lord. Then Joshua said to the people, you are witnesses against yourself that you have chosen the Lord to serve him. And they said, we are witnesses. We will testify. Yes, we will remember this date. And when we go astray, we'll call people out and say, man, you're not on mission for God. Remember when you committed to that. I can't tell you the most painful part of ministry has been to go and study at universities and study at seminaries and see countless friends turn away. To see countless friends say, man, I was kind of in, but now I'm not. To see guys who were committed to the mission forsake the Lord. And for none of them, none of it has turned out well. I mean, they've got okay lives and they live normal lives, but there's not the joy of feeling called to something greater. There's not the joy of connecting. A lot of these people I hear a lack of community. They feel that loss in them, and just that it's been painful to watch. But you see what Josh was talking about, that if you forsake God, man, you're witnesses to the commitment that you made. Don't you know the curses of the covenant, that if you say you're going to be on mission for God, that the curses will come? And the good news is that this is not talking about being perfect all the time. Okay, how many of us fail a little bit from time to time? You get vision drift a little bit? You get mission drift? Where you're on board, you're on mission, and then you slowly creep away, things come into your lives, things steal your time. I mean, it happens to me all the time. I've confessed that to you guys. But what's happening here is what we see is that God is not calling for perfection, but what ends up, the way this plays out, is that when his people leave him, when his people forsake him, bad things happen, and they cry out to God again. And God swoops in and says, okay, you're forgiven. I'm not going to forgive you. I'm not going to bless you if you are unrepentant and running from me. But as soon as you turn back, as soon as you turn back, I'm there. I am your God. You are my people. He sent his son. He sent Jesus Christ to pay for these curses, to pay for the sins that we have, to pay for all the bad things that we've done, to pay for every time that we said we were going to be on mission for God and left. That Jesus Christ paid the penalty for all of that. So that God can freely say, you're my son. Even though you've left me, even though you've forsaken me, even though you've walked away from me, now I will bless you when you come back and be my people, and I will be your God. And he says that we're witnesses to that commitment, and then go put away all the foreign gods. So say, hey, this is what you've said. You're committed to this. So now it's time to put away the foreign gods that are among you. Incline your heart to the Lord, the God of Israel. And the people said to Joshua, the Lord our God, we will serve, and his voice we will obey. So Joshua made a covenant, this agreement with the people that day, and put in place statutes and rules for them at Shechem. Said, okay, this is what it looks like for us to live for God. This is the law, and he goes back and shows them, here are the five books that Moses gave us. We're going to follow these laws, we're going to follow these rules, because this is what it looks like for us to be on mission at God. At Genesis, we have a lot of these, rules or statutes, we probably wouldn't use that, but we have a lot of these avenues that we're constantly telling people, this is what it means to be on mission at Genesis. To be on mission for God at Genesis, a lot of that's going to look like the service projects that we do church-wide. We have a Eureka Days parade coming up. For those of you who have not been with us during a Eureka Days parade, we are the last float. And what Genesis Church does is we try to wear our Genesis shirts, but we don't have a big sign or anything. We're not super, well, maybe we do. I don't know. But the point of it is that we want the people to know we love the city by cleaning up the parade. Okay? We are trying to say, man, we are here for you. Okay? And the idea is that we're going to clean up after the parade so the city doesn't have to hire people, so the streets don't stay dirty for a few days. That we will come in and clean up immediately, just follow the parade and clean it up. And we don't take money for this. We don't pay money if you're looking for that. But we do call all of our members to be on mission and serve and love the city. That's one of the ways that we have coming up that you can say, man, I could enjoy this parade, or I could be a part of it. I could be a part of being on mission for God and loving the city and cleaning up this parade. Another way we do it is community groups. That we call people that are members at Genesis. We say, man, be a part of a community group. If you've been hanging out for a long time, be a part of a community group. A community group is a great way for you to get connected with people, but also be on mission for God. That all of our community groups meet in neighborhoods. We have five different community groups that are going to meet in Eureka and around Eureka, and then I'm leading a group that's actually going to go lead a group in the Central West End, in the city. That this is part of the initial steps of starting a church in the city, that we are committed to being on mission in those neighborhoods. So if you meet in Mirasol, we'll have a new group, brand new group this year, that if you meet in Mirasol, that you show up, and the idea is about once a month, you're going to be doing something that's out in public. You're not just going to be showing up and sitting in a circle and reading the Bible and talking to each other. and talking, you know, Christianese and talking about deep theology. Like, there's a place for that, but that's not all that's going to happen with these groups. That these groups are going to be out in the neighborhoods, and these groups are going to have parties, and that's the vision for community groups, is that you sit out on your front porch and have a barbecue, and there are five different families that show up from the community group that wouldn't normally show up to a Bible study. And so they're going to show up to this place, or you're going to go out and serve. You're going to do something like a kids club. We've done those before. Or you're going to just do something fun. Halloween comes around. Here's a great idea. Halloween comes around, and your group sits outside and passes out candy and maybe has a drink or a hot dog or something. Make a party out of it. Give a little game that a kid can play. And you can have a conversation with a parent. And you can say, man, we hope this is a fun experience for you and your family. We hope we've done something to bless you. We hope we've done something to make your life better, to make this night better. We hope we've provided a party that you've been able to enjoy and sort of forget about some of the hardships of the world. And hopefully the natural question is, well, why do you care about me that way? You don't even know me. You just show up to one of my neighbor's house. Why do you care about me? Man, I care about you because God loves me. Because God cares about my burdens. And I want to care about your burdens. And so we see in the community groups that we can be on mission. That we can do what we're talking about, what we're preaching here. It's not out of grasp. It's not something that the whole church has to do at one time, but that it can happen in a small group, in a neighborhood, that you can love people and be on mission for God as a part of Genesis Church. In your community groups, in your neighborhoods, in Mirasol, in Baldwin, in Hilltop, in Top Notch. Like, you can be on mission on those streets, in those neighborhoods. And that's what we see here, sort of these rules or statutes or these plays that we say, this is how we serve the Lord at Genesis. And Joshua wrote these words, this is verse 26, and Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law, and he took a large stone and set it up there under the terebinth that was by the sanctuary of the Lord. And Joshua said to all the people, behold, this stone shall be a witness against us. So if you forget the commitment you've made, every time you look at this stone, you'll remember. And Joshua said to all the people, behold, this stone shall be a witness against us, for it has heard all the words of the Lord that he spoke to us. Therefore, it shall be a witness against you, lest you deal falsely with your God. So Joshua sent the people away, every man. Check out those last words. He sends them away to his inheritance. His inheritance is a plot of land. His inheritance is a place that God has said, I have given you this plot of land. I have given you this place to live. But I didn't give it to you so that you could be happy. I didn't give it to you so that you could just be happy. I didn't give it to you so that you could just have time to yourself. I gave it to you because this is part of being on mission. This plot of land that you stand on, that is your inheritance, that you are going to be my people there. And he sends away his people after this big rally cry. We will serve the Lord in my inheritance, in my plot. I will go here and love and serve the Lord. And the nations around me will see that. And so some of the challenges that I want us to really look through quickly, because I spent a lot of time there. But some of the challenges I want is that when we fear and serve the Lord, that what we see here is we're fearing and serving the Lord exclusively. That God is calling us to put away the distractions, put away the idols. This doesn't mean you can't be involved in fantasy football. I have to say that every time because I'm involved in fantasy football. But what it does mean for Weston Ely is that I cannot be involved in as many fantasy football leagues as I would like. What it can mean is I need to, instead of just doing the online leagues that I don't know anybody there, I'm going to do some leagues with people that I know. And so the league becomes a way to facilitate relationship. And I try to redeem the idea of fantasy football. Maybe you've got some similar things with kids, and you say, man, I don't want to give up taking my kids to soccer. That we're so busy when soccer comes around. We're so busy when football and baseball and basketball. We're just so busy with all the sports stuff. And I don't think God is necessarily saying you have to get away from all sports, all kids' sports. You got to just clear their schedules and go do church stuff every night of the week. I don't think that's what God would want. But what I see here is to exclusively fear and serve the Lord in the light of a Eureka community that has a lot of kids' sports, what does it look like for you to be on mission in your inheritance? What does it look like to be on mission when you take your kid to that soccer team to stick around and meet the parents? And some of you guys are probably already doing that. That there's a way to redeem that, that it's not in competition with your mission, but it correlates with your mission, that this is your inheritance. Go serve and fear the Lord here. So if you have a kid in a baseball team and you go and you meet the parents and you engage, you're like, I'm intentional. I'm going to intentionally fear and serve the Lord here in this baseball community. I'm gonna love these other parents. I'm going to ask them, what are your needs? What are your fears? What are you hoping for? Can I pray for you? You know, I've asked some people who I knew did not like anything about Jesus or God or anything. But when you ask people, can you pray for them? 99% of the time, you're going to get, especially out here in Eureka, you're going to get a yes. No one's going to be like, oh, what do you think I'm some? No one's going to like push back on you. Okay, no one's going to fight you to pray for them. Most people are very flattered that you would think of them, and so you redeem that mission scenario, redeem that inheritance. That you are on mission where God has placed you. So you're not just filling up your schedules with kids' sports and running them back and forth and then doing work while you're there and just cramming your schedule so full that you can't have relationships. But you're going to say, no, I think it's good for us to go to this game. I think it's good for us to be a part of this team. And you know, while my kid's out there on the field, I'm going to engage this other parent. You know, think about what are those scenarios that you can look at in your life where you're just like, oh, I'm too busy. But what if I was on mission for God in this scenario instead of cutting it out of my life? What are those in your life? I also think we need to do it seriously. We need to fear and serve the Lord seriously, that we can't just do this casually. It's not just, I'm going to serve the Lord, but I'm not going to fear him. Fear is a unique word in the Bible, that it's not this fear of, you know, if, you know, we think of like terrorism right now, you know, there's fear, and it's not that type of fear. It's not that type of like, you know, I hope this doesn't happen, this anxiety. It's not that type of fear, but it's a fear of seeing someone powerful enough that they could crush you, but knowing that they love you, and it's a fear that drives you to them, okay? I think modern example, I think Shaq, Shaquille O'Neal is probably the best example of this, because he's a 7'2" guy that could just flatten anybody, but he's so goofy and fun-loving that you just love to watch him. He's entertaining. You just love to be around him. There's just, you know, that's the type of fear that we're talking about. It's the respect. I know that you could crush me. I know you could end me, but it's a fear that drives me into the arms of my Savior. It's a fear that drives me into the arms of my God. And so we need to serve God seriously. You know, we're going to have a responsive reading where we're calling Genesis to serve and commit to serving God. Don't do it casually. Don't do it where like, yeah, I think maybe I'll ask someone to pray for me next week, or I'll ask someone if I can pray for them next week. But be serious about it. That we are asking Genesis to be on mission this fall, this summer, this spring. And we're asking you guys to be on mission for God here at Genesis by being a part of community groups, by being a part of Eureka Days Parade, by plugging in and serving with the church. And lastly, that we do it publicly. You know, if we commit and we share our commitments to one another, it'll be just like, hopefully, my scenario earlier on where no one wanted to speak up. No one wanted to say their sleeping bag was wet. No one wanted to be the first guy to bail. No one wanted to be the first guy to say, hey, let's just turn the car around. But as a group of people, we look at one another and say, man, we're linking arms. There's strength in numbers that God has called us to be on mission. That's what I hope and pray for Genesis, and hopefully you will find things in the church-wide, like Eureka Days Parade cleaning up, that you'll find ways to connect and serve and fear the Lord in the community group level, and that you'll find ways to fear and serve the Lord in your personal level. And I hope you'll find those three tiers of how can I fear and serve the Lord. I'm going to invite a couple of the elders to come up, and we're going to do a reading that's based on these scriptures. That we can apply it to our lives. Hopefully, you've seen how I've read the story of Joshua, but have seen what it looks like for us at Genesis to fear and serve the Lord in this context. And so that's what I would challenge you with is as we read this, think about what are those ways in your life today, this week, this month, that you can say, Man, I think as a family, we need to commit to serving God here. That we need to commit to serving God in the relationships that we have, in our inheritance. And that if we do that as a church, we could really start to see Genesis reached for Jesus. That we could see the gospel message displayed in an even greater step than we've seen so far. That the next generation of Genesis Church will push the mission beyond, hopefully, what any of us could conceive.